Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Patriots wide receiver Antonio Brown has been accused of rape by a woman who worked as his trainer. Let's start right there. In a federal lawsuit filed yesterday in the Southern District of Florida, Brittany Taylor alleges three separate incidents of sexual assault. Now, Taylor and Brown knew each other back at Central Michigan, where she was a gymnast, before she transferred to LSU. In 2016, she opened up a gymnastics training center, and according to this suit, Brown sent Taylor a Facebook message in 2017 to ask about her training him, specifically to improve flexibility and strength in his ankles. Now, the details of the allegations are graphic. They are disturbing, so I'm going to read the following from the New York Times report. Quote, according to the suit, Brown sexually assaulted Taylor twice during training sessions in June of 2017. First, he exposed himself and kissed her without permission, the lawsuit says. Later that month, the lawsuit says, while they were streaming religious programming on a tablet at his South Florida home, Brown started masturbating behind Taylor and ejaculated on her back. End quote. The lawsuit states that Taylor told her mother and Brown's personal chef about the second incident. And as part of the lawsuit filing, there are emails from Antonio Brown to Taylor that reference the incident. According to the lawsuit, Taylor stopped working for Brown at that point, but in February of 2018, he contacted her to start working together again. She ignored him. A few weeks later, he reached out once again asking her if she hated him and stating, quote, I apologize first off with so much going on around me and my actions, end quote. And according to the suit, Brown assured her that, quote, he would cease any sexual advances, end quote. The lawsuit maintains that on May 20th, 2018, Brown invited Taylor and others to go to a club in Miami. At the conclusion of that night, Taylor drove Brown and another individual back to Brown's house. The lawsuit says that Taylor needed to use the bathroom before driving back to her hotel, but Brown grabbed her and then pulled her into his bedroom. At some point, Taylor began to walk out of the room. Brown allegedly, quote, cornered her, end quote, forced her onto the bed, pushed her face into the mattress, and, quote, forcibly, unquote, raped her. The lawsuit states that Taylor, quote, screamed and cried and repeatedly yelled no and stop. Also, according to the suit, quote, devastated and disoriented, she ran into his foyer and collapsed on the ground. No one came to her rescue or to help her in any way. She was completely alone. Eventually, she summoned the strength to pick herself off the floor, make it to the door, get into her car and drive, dazed and emotionally shattered, to her hotel. She was so exhausted that she fell asleep at a stoplight on the drive back. End quote. Then the next day, she went to Brown's to retrieve personal belongings, and according to the suit, Brown said, quote, you made me feel like a real rapist, end quote. And then in a statement, Taylor said, and I quote, as a rape victim of Antonio Brown, deciding to speak out has been an incredibly difficult decision. I have found my strength in my faith, my family, and from the accounts of other survivors of sexual assault, end quote. Meantime, Brown's attorney released a statement last night that claims the two had a consensual, personal relationship and, quote, any sexual interaction with Mr. Brown was entirely consensual, end quote. Further, the statement claims that the lawsuit is, quote, a money grab, end quote. Brown's attorney also tweeted, quote, Antonio Brown will leave no stone unturned and will aggressively defend himself, including exercising all of his rights in countersuits, end quote. All right, so there's an awful lot in that, but that's a brief summary of a lawsuit and the charges. Personally, I am not going to rush in. I'm not going to jump to any conclusions. I'm not going to make any determinations based off the suit and on Brown's response to that suit. Taylor's expressed a willingness to meet with the NFL as part of an investigation. According to Mark Maskey of the Washington Post, the NFL will, quote, give serious consideration, end quote, to putting Brown on the commissioner exempt list while they conduct an investigation. Now, I know plenty of you are probably thinking. I know what plenty of you are probably thinking. So let me cut this off right now. This part of it. Let me cut this off at the pass right now. If your reaction to this is to be remotely concerned or worried about the Patriots or your fantasy team, shut that down and just go home. Don't call or email or tweet. You're not welcome with that. Now, if you've got something insightful or something constructive to add, I'm open to that. But if you've got jokes, keep moving. In terms of the Patriots and what they knew and what they didn't know and what they should know or what they shouldn't know, or are they surprised as they say they are, I want to get into all of that as well. I'm just not really concerned about your fantasy team. See, this is not just Antonio Brown's problem right now. This is also the Patriots' problem right now. And the NFL's too. 1-800-636-8686. I am not here for your jokes. I'm not looking for your jokes. I'm not having your jokes. If you have something to add to this, if you can elevate this conversation, if you have something insightful to add to it, go ahead. Call right now. 1-800-636-8686. In terms of Bill Belichick, I would say this. Hey, Bill, you can't, we're on to Cincinnati with this. But then again, in effect, he kind of did do that.
On Antonio's situation, both Antonio and his representatives have made statements. And so I'm not going to be expanding on any of those. They are what they are. We've looked into the situation. We're taking it very seriously all the way through the organization. I'm sure there are questions, but I'm not going to be entering into a discussion about that today.
Delanie Walker is my guest. Delanie, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good, good. Listen, I know at this point in the week you've already shifted your attention to the Colts, but can you take me back to Sunday against the Browns? You knew the kind of hype they had received all offseason. What was your mindset and the mindset of the entire locker room prior to that game?
Cancel out the noise, go in there and play our type of football, and that's just physical and finish, and that's what we did.
That is what you did. You know, from a personal standpoint, for you, your 2018 season ended in week one when you suffered that dislocated and fractured ankle. So after all the work you put in during the rehab process, what was it like for you to run out onto the field and play in an NFL game once again after missing all that time?
Felt great. I'm just blessed to have the opportunity to be back on the field. I know I put in all the hard work, but I'm blessed to have the opportunity. Blessed to be on this team with the coaching staff that we have, the owner, and believing in me and giving me another opportunity to show that I still belong in this league. So it felt great just to go back out there and prove all the doubters wrong.
Delanie Walker joining us. I want to get to that point in 1 minute. You know, it's one thing though to have the opportunity and to put yourself in a position to get back on the field, but then to have the game that you had, 5 receptions, 55 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Take me through the first TD. What did you see on that play, and then how good did it feel to catch that one in?
It was just a great play call by our offensive coordinator. But I said it before, after the game, it takes all 11 guys. Takes a great fake by the running back, the O-line keeping their pads low, selling run, receivers running their route, and the quarterback putting the perfect ball in the air. And there you have it, me scoring a touchdown. So that's pretty much how I went.
Delanie Walker is joining us. Now, as you point out, as a 35-year-old tight end coming off an injury like the one you had, people are going to count you out, think your best days are behind you. In fact, there were a lot of mock drafts that had Tennessee selecting a tight end. I know you saw that, so did you feel like you had something to prove on Sunday?
I feel like I have something to prove every year. But at the end of the day, I see all of that stuff, and it's funny because the guys that say I'm down and out, they may have retired at a 30 or couldn't perform at a high level like I am, but don't put me in that same category. I'm not you. So I'm just glad that I proved all of them wrong, and I'm going to keep doing it. It's early. I still got a lot of football ahead of me, and I'm excited to see what I do.
Sign up and be an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every dollar spent. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address. O Rewards members get $5 back for every $150 they spend. It is fast, it is easy, and it's free only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store or orewards.com for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, so what about that mindset? I mean, the thing is, you've had a really nice career. And then after that injury, you could have said, you know what? It's been a great run. I'm just going to move on right now. But that's not what you did. You put in the time, you came back. Why was it so important to come back, and why did you come back?
I didn't get to play in 2018, first off. I wanted to come back and just show everyone that I'm still capable of playing at a high level. And I like playing for the Tennessee Titans. I like the coaches. I like the players. So I didn't want to let them down. In my mind, I feel like I'm a big part in this offense. So I wanted to come back and make sure see if I can help this team get to where we want to get to, and that's the Super Bowl. And that's why I put in all the hard work, and that's why I'm back trying to accomplish that goal.
Titans tight end Delanie Walker is my guest. Also, last month you tweeted out pics of your ankle after the surgery. At least I think it was your ankle, because I couldn't look at those pictures very long without tripping. I mean, what was that rehab process like for you?
It was hard. You got to imagine 7 months in a boot, not being able to walk, and then doing these crucial stretching exercises that pretty much killed me. It was tough. And then to go through that process of just being able to walk again and getting the flexibility back in my ankle, and then trying to run and do all the other things, it was very tough. But again, like, I'm going to keep saying this, I'm blessed to be in this opportunity and overcome all of that.
Listen, I understand that. I know there's gratitude there. I know you appreciate that you had that opportunity. But, I mean, you did the hard work. You really did the hard work. Not only that, you ate a really clean diet during the rehab process. I know a number of guys on the Titans are going plant-based. What did that do for you, that change in diet or that clean diet? And how much better did you feel as a result of that?
I felt better. You know, I got lighter. I knew I had to get a little bit lighter to take some pressure off of my ankle. So that it helped me a lot, just by getting a little lighter and getting a little bit more lean, and it helped my pretty much my recovery time. I was able to come back faster. I know I can always put the weight on, so that was never my worry. And then once I was able to lift weights, it just came back quickly. My energy was back. I was still conditioned because I wasn't heavy. You know, most people get injured and they put a lot of pounds on, but I did the opposite. I took pounds off. So I knew I would be able to come back and recover faster and be able to get back to my tip-top shape.
Yeah, I was going to say, so where does that leave you right now? For instance, coming in and out of your breaks and running the routes the way you run right now, do you feel like you can do everything you could do prior to the injury? Or maybe, in a sense, do you feel like you're even better?
You know, I feel like I'm even better. I told some of the reporters earlier, I feel like I'm in the best shape I've ever been in. I'm leaner. I feel faster. You know, I really can't tell, but in my mind, I feel faster. I think I come out of my breaks pretty well. I'm catching the ball well. But, you know, again, it's early. I still got a lot of football to go. So hopefully I still feel this way around week 10, and that's the goal.
Tight end for the Titans, Delanie Walker's my guest. After that game, you had that great Dennis Green reference. How much did all that hype that Cleveland was getting bother you in the build-up to that game?
Honestly, it didn't bother me. You know, I'm getting a lot of hate from the Browns fans because they think that I was taking shots at the Browns. I really wasn't taking shots at them. I was taking shots at the analysts that said that the Browns already was a Super Bowl team that was going to the Super Bowl, that was going to be the best team in their division. I was taking shots at them. I really wasn't taking shots at the Browns. I feel like the Browns have a really good team, have a lot of good guys there that can make that team great. So, you know, I said what I said because they were the only ones hyping them up. I don't feel like the Browns was hyping themselves up. I feel like it was the analysts on all these sports channels that was hyping them up. So the shot was really going towards them for basically saying, you crowned them already, so if you want to crown them, crown them. You know what I mean? But still got to play football.
Well, guilty on this end. Although I didn't crown them, I admit I am fascinated by them, and I think they've got a lot of upside still. But on the flip side of that, when you look at all the penalties that they committed, the mistakes that they made, including Greg Robinson getting ejected for kicking Kenny Vaccaro in the head, Myles Garrett appearing to take a swing at you, Did it feel like maybe they were not ready to be in the spotlight the way you guys were ready for it?
You know, at the end of the day, sometimes when you buy into the media and the glory, sometimes it can get to you. You think that you already won. And we were always the underdog. So we came in playing like the underdog. And, you know, some people would say we upsetted them. But at the end, in our mindset, we was thinking we were going to win that game anyway. So, if you buy into the hype, sometimes I feel like it can make you feel like you already won. And then you go in a game unprepared or not really ready for what's about to come.
Delanie Walker is joining us for a few more moments. What about the defense? I had Cameron Wake on the show earlier in the offseason. He had a monster game. He had 2.5 sacks. He had a safety. How impressive was he and your entire defense?
Oh, they were outstanding. We can't win games without them. And what he did later in that game, just causing them sacks and rushing the quarterback and our defense, getting them picks and just hurrying around and being explosive and just every man to the ball, that's exciting to watch. It actually pumps us up as an offense. And we sat on the sideline, like, we got to be like our defense. We got to be explosive. We got to make plays. And it finally came, and we started putting points up on the board, and we played complimentary football. And that's all we talk about, all phases. Got to be special teams, defense, and offense for us to win games, and that's what we did.
And now you've got the Colts in your place on Sunday, a chance to go 2-0 for the season. So what kind of thoughts do you have when you look at the Colts and the challenges that they pose?
I can only talk about their defense. I feel like the defense is very explosive, very fast. Every person runs to the ball. Got some smart guys there. You can tell that they watch film. They see things out. They sniff things out. We just got to be the Tennessee Titans, man. We got to stick to our game plan, be physical, be able to run the ball, and then also make plays when we put the ball in the air. And it should be a good day.
Hey, one more thought. During the offseason, you were back here in Pomona, and you were hosting a youth football camp. What's that like? Like, what's it mean to know that you've got kids coming out to see you and wanting to learn from you?
It means a lot to me. You know, growing up in Pomona, we didn't have that as a kid when I was growing up. So for me to go back and give back to my community and then see all the kids that know who I am and rep my jerseys and just be excited to see me, it goes a long way because I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for them so they can see that they do have an opportunity to be whoever they want to be. If that's playing in the NFL, you can do that. If that's being a doctor, you can do that. If that's being the president, you can do it. Don't ever let no one put you in a box and tell you what you can't do, because you can do anything you want when you put your mind to it. And that's all I try to do when I go out there and give back to the community.
I like it. Proved it once again yourself, coming back from that injury, having a big week one. Tennessee's 1-0. They're at home against Indianapolis on Sunday. That is a CBS game. He is a three-time Pro Bowler, had a couple of TDs in week one. Delanie Walker, my guest. Delanie, good to have you back on. Thanks so much.
Always. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Always good to talk some Titans football. Man, they made a statement. They made a real statement in week one. And he said, I was getting a lot of heat from the Browns fans. He said, that was not directed at the team. That was directed at all the analysts who wanted to crown their ass. Hey, look, there was a lot of hype. I was the guy banging that drum the loudest. The Patriots released the following statement. Quote, we are aware of the civil lawsuit that was filed earlier today against Antonio Brown, as well as the response by Antonio's representatives. We take these allegations very seriously. Under no circumstances does this organization condone sexual violence or assault. The league has informed us that they will be investigating. We will have no further comment while that investigation takes place. End quote. So if that sounds like the Patriots are trying to pass the buck, it's because they sure would like to pass the buck. Except that's not how that works. The league is investigating the case, but this is New England's problem now. Notice how my first take started and how every report about this news reads. New England Patriots receiver Antonio Brown has been accused of sexual assault. And that's because in all of the news reports, he is listed as New England Patriots wide receiver because they signed him. They brought him in. He is officially on their books. His problems are now their problems. They own this. You sign Antonio Brown, you get Antonio Brown. All of him. And so now the questions begin. Did they not know about this sexual assault lawsuit? And if that's the case, how bad do they look right now? Or did they know about it and ask Brown about it? And were they okay with how he answered the questions? Or did they know about it and just not care? I'm not sure there are any great answers for the Patriots here. In fact, there really are zero good answers and a lot of questions. If they didn't know, it's horrible timing, and they look like complete idiots if they didn't know. Just yesterday, Bill Belichick was talking about Brown. This is what he had to say when he was asked about what happened to Brown in Pittsburgh and Oakland.
Well, I wasn't in either one of those places, so I really can't comment on what did or didn't happen there.
All right. And then when he was asked about how or whether or not Brown would fit in, this is how he responded.
That's the same thing you said about Randy Moss when we got brought him in.
So what are you saying? I mean, pretty terrible look to be saying that this is the same thing you people said when I brought Randy Moss in. And then a few hours later, have a federal lawsuit alleging three incidents of sexual assault drop. I mean, maybe I'm the one missing something here. I could be missing something, but I don't recall Randy Moss being hit with a federal lawsuit of sexual assault within hours of him arriving in New England. Do any of you remember that? Because I don't. You're all in on Antonio Brown. To paraphrase Tom Brady, you're 100% in. 1,000% in. You're 1,000,000% in on Antonio Brown. I mean, isn't the story that Brady offered to let Brown stay at his house? You don't get any more in on a guy than having him bunk at your place. Even if the Patriots didn't know about the incidents alleged in the lawsuit, they knew a lot of other things about Antonio Brown. Like him driving more than 100 in a 45. Like him throwing furniture off the balcony of a 14-story building. Or the allegation of Brown shoving the mother of one of his kids. Or the report that he threatened to punch a fellow employee of another NFL team only a few days ago. If any of those incidents don't make you think twice and inspire you to do some serious digging on a guy that you're about to sign, and you don't, then that's on you. Wouldn't all of that make you do some serious digging? Unless you were concerned that somebody else was going to get him first and sign him. And if you go ahead and you sign him anyway, even if you don't find the allegations of sexual assault, then you inherit every problem that comes with him afterwards. You've adopted this guy, for better or for worse. You don't get to just take the receptions and the touchdowns and ignore all the other stuff. I mean, I'm never going to say that you shouldn't be surprised when somebody's accused of sexual assault, because that's completely different than excessive speeding or throwing furniture or threatening to punch a GM. But honestly, can the Patriots really claim that they're surprised by this? Because that's exactly what Adam Schefter reported, that the Patriots were, quote, caught by surprise. Can they really say they're surprised by anything they hear about Antonio Brown? And the guy who couldn't wait to tell everybody about how badly he was, quote, duped by Aaron Hernandez, was duping the world by going to see sex workers in a strip mall on the day of the AFC Championship game. Even that claim that, quote, under no circumstances does this organization condone sexual violence or assault. Even that seems a little bit weird, right? I mean, didn't they trade for Albert Haynesworth when he was facing a sexual assault charge that he later pled no contest to? I mean, if the Patriots are trying to claim that they're good judges of character, they better stop with that right now. And just be honest. Just be honest. Just own it. You signed Antonio Brown for the same reason you do anything at all. You thought he could help you win. And you hoped that he wouldn't hurt you that much. You hoped that the positives would outweigh the negatives. You hoped that the good would outweigh the bad. So the Patriots don't get a pass on this one. It's not good enough to just throw your hands up and say, oh, wow, we were really surprised. We had no idea. We were duped. We were really surprised. Because you can't be surprised. When you sign somebody with Antonio Brown's recent track record, you cannot be surprised when he adds to that track record. No matter how heinous and hideous the latest incident might be, you cannot be surprised. And Hood, you can't run to Cincinnati.
We're on to Cincinnati.
Yourself out of this one either. Although he did try by saying we're on to Miami. Or we're focused on Miami. You can't do that. You can't do that, neither can the organization. You can't be surprised. Bill, you simply cannot be surprised. Bill?
Are you preparing to have Antonio Brown practice today?
Yes.
And are you preparing for him to play on Sunday?
We're taking it one day at a time, just like we always do.
Are you preparing for the possibility that he could be on the commission?
We're preparing for one day at a time.
How much weight would the allegations against him weigh into whether or not you play him on Sunday?
Yeah, I appreciate all the questions, and that's what's been said has been said.
Bill, you brought up Randy Moss yesterday. Do you think that Antonio Brown will require as much attention as Moss did to get him in sync with the team?
Yeah, I didn't say that.
I'm asking you.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know if he'll require more attention?
No.
How difficult or frustrating is it to have a distraction like this right at the beginning of the season when you?
We're working on Miami. We're working on Miami. The rest of it is, we're on Miami.
Great timing. As you all know, today is September 11th. And it was 18 years ago today that the United States was attacked. Even though it's been nearly two decades, you can probably remember exactly what you were doing and exactly how you felt at that time. My thoughts are with those who lost family members and friends and those whose lives were forever changed. All these years later, I still cannot begin to imagine how you feel today and every day since. My gratitude is with those who enlisted, those who re-enlisted, and those who stayed on. Some of whom made the ultimate sacrifice. And I know a number of you have also shared your thoughts. I want to read an email right here. Dear Jim, I hope you're well, my man. As we hit another anniversary of 9/11 this year, it takes me back to that dark day 18 years ago. I remember you coming on the air that week, and that was really the only thing normal about that week and the weeks that followed. Everything had permanently changed in the world. But the one thing that stayed the same in some capacity was sports and hearing your voice at 9 a.m. every day. Thanks for doing what you do. I would love for you to retell that powerful story involving former Georgetown legend John Thompson and your former producer as it relates to 9/11. The story still gives me goosebumps thinking about it and really shows how some decisions that fateful day were the difference between life and death. Keep up the good work, and here's to another 18 years. Never forget. Signed, Ryan. You know, I've played the sound of this exchange before, and I asked myself if I should do it again, but I do know for a fact we continue to add new listeners to the program. And even there's some existing listeners that have never heard this story. And the story does relate to Georgetown legend John Thompson and a producer by the name of Danny Swartz, who I used to work with back in the day. And both of them came on the show one year, and we talked about what happened in the events leading up to that day.
Let me try to go back, because I've been telling this thing for 10 years. Right at the time of 9/11, Jim, some of my people were talking with a representative of your staff who wanted me to come on the show. The young man who my representative was talking to was trying to get me to travel on the 12th to L.A. Well, I said, no, I didn't want to travel. And I told my representative, I said, no, I'm not going to go. I will only go if I can go on the 11th because I want to be in Vegas on the 12th. Story. The young man called back to the office a few days before all of this happened and said, listen, he wasn't able to get the studio or whatever he was trying to accomplish with me, Jim, and wanted to know whether I would come on the 12th. Well, back in those days, I didn't compromise hardly anything, you know, and what happened is that I told my people, I said, well, let me talk to this boy because I'm not going to go. You know, I said, if I can't go on the 11th, I'm not going to go. By then, we had made the reservations and everything. Okay, so I talked to the young man. The guy was very pleasant, and he and I went back and forth and talking. And it wasn't hostile. But anyway, what he finally said to me is he said, Coach, he said, if you promise me that you'll come on the 12th, I will get you back to Vegas immediately after we do the taping. He said, and I will make certain that you get there in time for whatever you're trying to get done. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying to myself, oh, hell, I don't want to do this. And the guy was nice. I mean, he was persuasive. He wasn't hostile with me. So I said, okay, son, I'll do it. I said, I'll come on the 12th. Now, if he had not have tried to been persistent with me, I would have insisted that I stay and get on that plane on the 11th. Well, a little while after we all were reacting to the Pentagon getting hit, and she said, John, she said, look at your itinerary. I said, yeah, no, I'm supposed to go on the 12th. She said, no, look at your itinerary. You were supposed to go on that plane. She said, that plane was the plane you were booked on. If that kid hadn't have talked you out of it, you would have been on that plane. So, you know, and making a shortcut around the whole story, I've been a Jim Rohn fan. Anybody talk about Jim Rohn, I'm whipping their ass. I'm going to tell you that right now. But that's, in essence, what did happen.
John, let's face it. I mean, you're no shrinking violent. You're a pretty intimidating guy. And for Danny to stand in there, that was kind of a hard line to walk.
Without this kid doing his job in a professional manner, I would have been in trouble. I mean, it would have been over. I mean, it really would have been over. But the way you did your job, particularly dealing with a person like me, I did what I did because I thought it was the best way for me to do it at that time. But I certainly do appreciate it. And I'm going to tell you, boy, if you ever come to Washington, you look me up. I'm going to make time for you.
I will do that. And it was a pleasure to speak to you back then, Coach. And it's a pleasure to speak to you today. And I'm glad it all worked out.
Thanks so much. And it just shows you when a person does his job in a professional way, that it does reap some benefits. If not for you, it damn sure did for me that time. And if you could have pissed me off, man, I'd have gotten mad. I mean, it would have been curtains for me. But you handled it in a way that I said, I cannot not do this the way you did it. So thanks very much. I appreciate that, Danny.
Thank you, Coach.
So I listen to that generally once a year. And people always ask for it. And I get chills every single time I hear that. Now, again, I want to say my thoughts are with those who lost family members, those who lost friends, those whose lives were forever changed. I want to state once again, all these years later, I cannot begin to imagine what that must feel like today, what that must feel like every day. But that story is really something. That conversation, that exchange that I just played was on the 10-year anniversary. That was on the 10-year anniversary, and the two of them, Danny Swartz, who used to work with me at Fox, and John Thompson, they had never spoken to each other since then. And to hear John Thompson tell that story really is something. And that whole point that, and Danny's smart, and Danny was very good at his job, but John Thompson saying, I really am thankful that he handled it the way he did and was as persuasive as he was in such a professional manner. He said, because back in the day, John Thompson said it, I did not compromise very much back in the day. And if he had pushed me hard or pushed me the wrong way, I would have said, I'm not doing this. And then it would have ended very badly. But that is a wild story. So 18 years ago today, everything changed. And a number of you do reset that every year at this time. And I know a number of you have never heard that before. Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker is joining us. So what was the mood like on the sideline going into OT?
Well, we know that we pride ourselves on our conditioning. Our team is built in a weight room. Our goal is to wear people down and make them quit in the end. We felt good going into overtime. We're at altitude. We're best conditioned. Our guys feel like they can run all day. I knew that we had a good shot when our captains went out to the coin toss and they were holding hands as they walked out. And I felt real good about that.
Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker is joining us. So Nebraska gets the ball to start OT. Your defense comes up with a huge sack on third down that results in a missed field goal. You get the ball. You kick the game-winning field goal. Everybody's on the field. What was that moment like for you and for your team?
Yeah, it was a very exciting time. I mean, our fans were great, man. Our students were unbelievable. They rushed the field. I mean, it was complete mayhem. The players were excited, and I saw a lot of people in red filing out. You know, so it was a heck of a deal. It was a great time in Boulder.
You know, Mel, when you talk about how your football team was built in the weight room, it's that for sure, but it's even more. Like Katie Nixon, who caught that 96-yard TD, said after the game, "quote We didn't win today. We won back in summer workout. We won back when Coach Tucker came in last December," end quote. So what's that mean to you to hear that from a player, and what's it say about the attitude of the program?
It tells me that our players are all bought in and they understand why we do what we do. You know, we put them through a 9-week winter conditioning program before we even started spring ball. Spring ball was physical. It was tough. And then we had a great summer and our fall camp was relentless. And our guys just believe in what we're doing. They know that everything we do is for a reason. We have to be best conditioned. Our team is built in the weight room. We have to be unselfish. We have to be disciplined, attention to detail, sense of urgency. And when you do things like that, you have a chance to be successful.
All right, so one of the words I pick, in fact, the word I pick out of that answer is relentless. I've heard you talk about that quite a bit. There's a lot of talk about being relentless around the program. Why is that so important? And when you use relentless, in what regard do you use that word? What's that mean to you?
Relentless means high velocity, and it means nonstop. We just have to go all day. And it's not just on the field, it's off the field. We have to be relentless in everything we do. You know, how we study, go to class, get our tutoring, our rest, our recovery. You know, how we study film. You know, how we practice, how we play the next play. We just got to keep going. There's no finish line. It just never stops.
That is relentless. Colorado Buffaloes head coach Mel Tucker joining us. You know, your coaching resume is pretty remarkable, and your name had come up for head coaching jobs. You had said that you had a list of boxes that you wanted to check before you took a job, and that Colorado checked all of the boxes. What were the items on your list, and what let you know that this was the right opportunity?
I believe first and foremost, you have to have two things. You have to have tradition and facilities. And Colorado, as you know, has a rich and proud football tradition here of winning, has won a national championship. A lot of great players, you know, Hall of Famers, College Hall of Fame guys, award winners. And then Rick George, our athletic director, has done a fantastic job. We have facilities here that are second to none, you know, top to bottom. So it's a first-class program. Facilities show a commitment to excellence, a commitment to winning. And then Rick George, the AD, he's a football guy. He played football at Illinois. He was here as the recruiting coordinator when Coach McCartney won the national championship, so he knows what it's all about. He knows what my challenges are. We're building this thing to win.
We're talking to Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker. They're 2-0. It's his first year. Now, of course, you played your college ball at Wisconsin. You were part of Barry Alvarez's first recruiting class. What do you remember about being recruited by Barry?
Yeah, Coach Alvarez is the man. I used to think he was in the mob. You know, he was the coolest guy. He was a hard nosed guy. He had a winning pedigree. Had just come from Notre Dame. They had just won a national championship. You know, and I remember him getting T-shirts for us after our first year. We were 1-10 my freshman year. We had T-shirts he gave us that says "We will win," and he told us to wear those things on campus, and we believed. And you know, he was an excellent recruiter. And we brought in great players year after year after year. And 4 years later, we're in the Rose Bowl. So I owe a lot to Coach Alvarez.
Dude, that is such a great answer. I thought that he was in the mob. You know, Emil, we sent our oldest son to Wisconsin a couple of weeks back. He's going to attend school there, so I've been spending some time on campus. I saw Barry Alvarez last year when they played Rutgers. Man, he's still cool. He's still cool. Oh, he still has that it. Man, Ron Dayne showed up, and I spent a little bit of time. And not that much time because you don't get that much time with the coach, but he's still cool like that, isn't he?
Yeah, Coach Alvy is the guy, man. Like, when I grow up, man, I want to be like Coach Al, man. He's got it all figured out, and he's a great coach, man. He's built a great program there. And he's a guy that I know that I can still count on to this day.
Hey, Mel, one more thing about that program before I let you go. You were part of a special group at Wisconsin. It included guys like Troy Vincent, who was an unbelievable player, Colts GM Chris Ballard, future NFL offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel. I mean, what do you remember about that time? Do you remember looking around and thinking, these guys aren't just good players, but they're going to have great futures in football going ahead? What was your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, we had a great group of guys there, and you know, it was about football. It was about going to school. You know, it was about, you know, making something of ourselves. And I mean, you mentioned Troy and Bev and Chris Ballard. You know, Todd Orlando, defensive coordinator at Texas. You know, Joe Rudolph, offensive coordinator at Wisconsin. I mean, Duer Sharp. You know, it just goes on and on and on. These guys that stayed in football and have had success in the game. And I think that's a tribute to our coaching staff that we had there in our environment. You know, they treated us well. They showed us the way, and they were role models for us. And obviously, we felt good about what they were doing, so we're doing the same thing.
You know, when you talk about having a tradition, Wisconsin has got a great tradition. You know, you were a grad assistant under Nick Saban at Michigan State, and then you worked with him at LSU, and then you went to the NFL, and you joined him again at Alabama. It's absolutely amazing. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I've known Coach Saban since I was 17 years old when he became the head coach at Toledo. He recruited me there, and so he's always been a mentor of mine. And, you know, I knew Nick, Coach Saban, before he won his first national championship, you know, when he was building his resume and when he was establishing himself and what type of programs he was going to run. And so I was right there, you know, almost on the ground floor, and I've seen him develop as a coach. I've seen him develop his program, and I've seen him build it, you know, three different places. And so that was a tremendous benefit for me, and really he gave me my first job in coaching in 1997. So certainly I owe my coaching career to Coach Saban.
So how has he changed? How has he evolved over the years?
Well, I'll tell you what, he's got relatively the same program. He's just perfected it. You know, he's like clockwork. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Casino. I mean, he's just like clockwork. I mean, day after day after day after day, you cannot outwork Nick Saban. I mean, he's a guy that's two, three, four steps ahead of everyone. And over the years, he's just become more relentless. He's got it down to a science, and he never stops working.
The process. I have seen Casino. That's a great movie. All right, so finally, Mel, and this has been a great conversation, but the really important stuff, you've said that you're a Twizzlers guy. For those who do not understand Twizzlers, lay it out for me. What makes Twizzlers special?
What makes Twizzlers special? I tell you what, every now and then, man, you gotta treat yourself, you know. And I enjoy a little Twizzler every now and then. It's not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal at all. In fact, it's a good deal. Colorado is 2-0 in the season. They had that amazing come-from-behind win over Nebraska in overtime on Saturday. Next up, they've got Air Force on Saturday. Another challenge. That's coming up at 1 p.m. Mel, that was great. You crushed your jungle debut. Really good to have you on the show. Congrats. I know you've got a lot of work ahead of you still. You'd say that, but great to have you, and thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you.
He is Michael McCann. Michael, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks for having me back on.
Always good to have you on. Now, you've got a very good piece on SI.com that breaks down the lawsuit, Michael, against Antonio Brown. Let's start with the fact that it's a civil suit and not a criminal case that's been brought against Brown. Can you lay that out for us? What is the distinction, and how significant is that distinction?
Yeah, it's a very significant distinction because it is a civil complaint, meaning that there's an allegation that he committed an act, a tort, and that ultimately, this, if the complaint is successful, he would owe the accuser money damages. There's no probable cause of a crime, at least as far as we know. Certainly, he hasn't been charged with the crime. There's no evidence that there's been a police investigation. It's really an accusation that, as we know, he has tried to rebut through his attorney. So it's a lower threshold. It's not nearly akin to the police charging him or him being indicted by a grand jury with an offense, and that means for the NFL, there's less to go on. It isn't as credible of an accusation, at least the optics of it, until the NFL is able to get more information. So this isn't like when Adrian Peterson is charged with the crime for child endangerment. This is really a much lower level accusation.
Michael McCann joining us. So certainly at this point, now, could it potentially evolve into a criminal matter?
It could. Because the Miami police are now aware of this civil complaint, it's possible they'll look into the accusations. I don't know how well they can investigate it at this stage because the incidents occurred in 2017 and 2018, at least the alleged incidents. But at a minimum, they could ask to speak with Brown and Taylor and see, try to at least get some information. She also referenced an unnamed football player in her complaint as being present when the alleged rape happened. That sort of jumped out to me, that there's another, potentially another player out there who knows something, and I suspect at some point we'll figure out who that is.
Michael McCann joining us. All right, so taking all that together, Michael, as you reviewed the lawsuit, what kind of thoughts do you have overall?
Well, I think there's a clear sort of narrative, telling of events from her perspective that tries to be logical, and that it's saying that he exploited a trainer-trainee relationship to sexually harass her and ultimately assault her, whereas his narrative is also pretty specific, and it frames her as exploiting that relationship, the trainer-trainee relationship, to try to get money from him for a business investment that Brown's lawyer depicts as kind of sketchy, and that the most importantly, that the sexual encounter that they had, and it's clear they both now cite the sexual encounter, that Brown claims it was consensual. So when I read that and then coupled with the rebuttal, we're left with really an accusation between two people. Now, her complaint does contain some electronic evidence of messages from him to her, at least purported messages. We don't know if they've been authenticated, but where he says some pretty bad things. That, though, doesn't prove that he committed rape. And, you know, I think we have to be cautious in linking sort of hostile messages with actual sexual assault.
Michael McCann joining us. I was going to ask you about the screenshots of the communication between he and her, and you just referenced that. One of the things, Michael, also that's been brought up is the fact that it appears that she did not go to authorities with the matter. What is your reaction to that?
Well, her telling of that, at least by how she implies it, is that she was so traumatized by what happened that it took a while for her to be in a position where she could come public with this complaint against Brown. That sort of the implication is that she wasn't in a position to go to the police after it happened because she was so terrorized and traumatized by it. Now, Brown's lawyer is going to say, well, you could still go to the police, but you've chosen to go through a civil lawsuit where your claims aren't yet investigated by law enforcement. She could say, well, law enforcement might treat Brown favorably because he's a celebrity and a famous player. I mean, there could be back and forth on that, but it may help Brown argue that if this was a fully truthful claim, that she would have alerted law enforcement, but she's going to say, yeah, I was so traumatized by what happened, I wasn't in a position to do that.
Legal analyst Michael McCann is joining us once again. So, Michael, the lawsuit itself, could something like this just come out of nowhere and be a surprise to Antonio Brown and the people around him? Or is a filing like this typically preceded by some sort of communication like a demand letter?
Yeah, absolutely. This was not a surprise. I'm sure the timing of the lawsuit may have come at an unexpected moment, though maybe they should have foresaw it given that he's going to be playing the Dolphins on Sunday. But yeah, this would follow a demand letter where her lawyers write a letter to his lawyer saying, here's what we claim. We're open to reaching a settlement out of court before this becomes a public matter. Now, maybe when Brown, and I'm speculating here, maybe Brown's lawyers got that and said, this is frivolous, this is untrue, we're not going to give money to somebody who's claiming something that is untrue. Obviously, her and her attorneys view it differently, but yeah, this would have followed the demand letter.
All right, so Michael, the timing, I mean, that being what it is, the timing is such that Brown signs with the Patriots and then the lawsuit drops. So what, if anything, should the Patriots have known about this before they signed him?
Yeah, I don't know what the Patriots would have known about this. I think even if a team does due diligence into a player, it does a thorough background check, and I assume the Patriots did that, this wouldn't have come up unless they had a tip, because there was no, as far as we know, there was no police investigation. There was no civil complaint until yesterday. There was no other sort of law enforcement or legal proceeding related to this, as far as we know. So I don't think the Patriots would have known, or the NFL would have known. It wouldn't have come up in a typical background check unless they had a tip that this was coming, but obviously they didn't.
We're talking to Michael McCann for a few more moments. Now, Brown's attorney, Michael, has indicated that he will countersue. What would a countersuit look like?
Yeah, so you might think, a lot of people think, well, defamation. Defamation probably wouldn't be available because statements made in a legal proceeding usually are exempt from defamation. But a countersuit could involve a tortious interference claim, which basically says you, the complainant, are trying to interfere with my relationship with the Patriots and the NFL, and by extension, the NFLPA. This is sort of a business claim that there's an attempt to make someone's employment jeopardize somebody's employment. I suspect the claim would be along those lines, maybe fraud, but you know, there's a risk of bringing a countersuit because that expands the scope of the pretrial discovery. So he may have to answer more questions under oath. He may have to share more emails, texts, and the like. So there's always a risk to that.
Michael, what about the NFL? How likely is it, for instance, that Antonio Brown goes on the commissioner exempt list?
So right now, I think if the NFL only has a civil complaint, although it could put him on the exempt list because the league has a lot of discretion as to when a player goes on the list, doesn't take a criminal charge. If the league has reason to believe a player may have committed a violent act against another, I don't know if just the complaint itself is enough. And unless the league can somehow quickly corral information with the game a few days away, from what I understand, Adam Schefter has reported that the complainant will speak with the NFL, or at least has offered to speak with the NFL next week. Maybe he goes on the list after that. But at least at this point, although the NFL, again, it's up to Goodell, I just think a civil complaint alone, I don't know if that's enough to justify putting somebody on the list.
You know, so a civil complaint alone might not be enough. And then there's this issue of consistency, right? Like, as you point out in your piece, the league did not suspend Tyreek Hill, despite evidence that he threatened his fiancée, but it did suspend Ezekiel Elliott, despite the fact that he was not charged with a crime. So knowing that, how consistent is the league when it comes to dealing with domestic violence and sexual assault?
Yeah, on the surface, it doesn't seem very consistent. Now, the league, I think, will push back and say, we know more than both of you guys, right? That the league has met with the accusers, in some cases, has found other evidence that they find telling, that Goodell reviews a thorough record, that Goodell doesn't punish anyone until after a long time because he's carefully going through the facts and the allegations. I don't know if that's true, but the league could argue that the reason why it seems to be inconsistent is because the public doesn't have the same level of information that the league has.
All right, so finally, as a quick follow, that said, when you look at the domestic violence and sexual assault policy that the NBA, for instance, and the NBA Players Association have developed, and to compare that with what the NFL has, how different are the two of them?
Well, for one, there is a policy, and there's a specific policy that allows, though the league has an interpretation of the conduct policy for domestic violence and sexual assault matters, it's not a standalone policy like the NBA has with its Players Association. And there's really a set of protocols that the NBA and their union have come up with in terms of meeting with experts, in terms of providing information. There's just sort of an orderly process, whereas with the NFL, it's much more up to Goodell. And even the commissioner's exempt list, that it's evolved into this mechanism that I don't think it was originally intended for. It's now evolved into, if there's an accusation that's somewhat credible, perhaps, of domestic violence or sexual assault, the commissioner reserves the right but doesn't have to put somebody on a list. There's a lot more ambiguity to it, and maybe in the next NFL-CBA, this isn't just the NFL's fault, it's also the union, right? It takes two to tango. Maybe in the next CBA they come up with something better.
And then I'll finally ask you this about the lawsuit in terms of a timeline. What kind of a timeline are we looking at in terms of this lawsuit and how it proceeds?
Jim, it could take a while. I mean, a federal lawsuit can take months. This is not going to be, unless they agree out of court to settle the case, which would involve him paying her money. Absent, and it doesn't sound like he's willing to do that. Absent that, this will take months. This is in the federal courts. This is behind the line of other cases. It's not going to get preferential treatment because it involves a star NFL player. It's going to be in the order in which it's received, and we're looking at a case that could certainly go into next year.
Good night now!